Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. 10 years ago, on August 26th, 2005, a major storm named Hurricane Katrina emerged into the Gulf of Mexico and began gathering strength. Within 3 days, it made landfall in southeast Louisiana as a Category 3 storm after being downgraded from a Category 5. It was the immediate and the long-term aftermath of Katrina that resulted in one of the worst natural disasters on U.S. soil, impacting mostly poor African-American residents of New Orleans and surrounding areas. About 2,000 people died. Countless others lost homes. The very fabric of the city was ripped apart, and 10 years later, it seems as though it has never been stitched back together again. My guest is Monique Hardin. She's a co-director and attorney with Advocates for Environmental Human Rights. Welcome to Uprising, Monique.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on your show.
Now, I want to, of course, discuss the issue of climate change and people of color, which I think is the big picture issue. But you're in New Orleans, and I'm wondering if you can confirm the statement that I made, that New Orleans just is not quite the same as it was before Katrina.
That's correct. And the reasons for it are not by happenstance, but it's really part of a concerted effort to drive hurricane recovery dollars, both from as part of disaster assistance and relief and recovery funds to philanthropic dollars, in a way that has displaced predominantly African American residents from the city of New Orleans, as well as in communities in the Gulf region, where poor and people of color are really facing significant hardships to towards the recovery that it's extremely important as a matter of human rights.
One of the major issues impacting New Orleans residents were, of course, schools and the devastation that the hurricane wrought, sadly, became a opportunity for school privatizers and this move to privatize the school system. Can you talk a little bit about how that has been a long-term aftermath of Hurricane Katrina?
Sure. Well, you're right. The situation with schools, as well as other public assets, have become platforms for disaster profiteering. And what we're seeing is that with all the promises of a new way of education through charter management companies that would receive, you know, all of these federal tax dollars for education to do what they want with, the schools are not performing any better. And that was one of the reasons for the charter and this idea of experimenting with it. Not only are the schools not at the academic performance that was promised with, you know, millions and millions of dollars being brought in, but we've wiped out a section of our residents, middle-class residents in New Orleans, who are the teachers and educational educators in our communities. They were terminated in the weeks after the storm from their jobs, and the schools were taken over and put in the hands of these charter management companies, which haven't been able to fulfill in any way the promises that they made around education performance. What's now being revealed is that the schools themselves, those buildings and the properties and the land that they're on, is really an opportunity for intensive land grabs and gentrification by a new law that was just enacted that would allow a charter management group to sell those school buildings to any individual or entity. And so it could go right into the hands of developers, where we're seeing a wave of activity that is gentrifying neighborhoods and pricing residents who have struggled to return out of their homes and communities. And the schools and the school buildings and the properties that they're on is the next step for further displacement of predominantly African-American residents. I mean, one of the things we're dealing with right now at Advocates for Environmental Human Rights, Sonali, is a plan by the Takeover School Authority, the Recovery School District, which has been, you know, replacing public school education with charter groups, and then these charter groups selling these buildings to developers, is a plan by the Recovery School District to relocate students from their current school building to a new school that is planned on a former city waste dump where the land is severely contaminated. And we're, you know, we're fighting this measure, but this is the best option you have for children, is putting them at risk of toxic exposure that can cut off their opportunities as they grow into adulthood.
So,
this is the state of New Orleans. Right. It's not, this PR campaign that's, brought to you by Goldman Sachs and the Rockefeller Foundation. It's not true. We are not fully recovered. The resilience of people are being undermined by plans and projects that are, designed to displace us from the places that we call home.
And Monique, the fact that this devastation wiped out so much infrastructure could have actually been a moment to turn things around for the better. They, could have been a way to have schools be rebuilt in a just manner, to have not have rec centers be built on dump sites but in clean environments. But the opposite happened, and this is something that we see over and over again. We've covered this on our program before. We just interviewed the author of a book recently called Disaster Profiteering, which was a term that you just used yourself, and Katrina was a prime example. How did that happen? I mean, is this predatory capitalism at work, if we just want to name it?
Well, the way the situation of displacement, I think for people who haven't experienced a disaster, whether it was, in the form of wildfires or tornadoes or a hurricane or severe storms and flooding, when you are forced to evacuate and leave, for the people who plan to do that ahead of time, they plan with the idea that they can come back within a week. For the people who, for whatever reason, it may be financial reasons and hardships, they are not able to evacuate, and then they are rescued away from, damaged communities through, fires or tornadoes or flooding. Again, the evacuation is done without this kind of sense of the long-term consequences of that. So in both cases, whether you evacuate on your own ahead of the storm or the natural disaster, or you evacuate during the disaster or immediately in its aftermath, you have in this case with Katrina, over a million people who were in a state of not knowing what where they were going and how long they were going to be there. I mean, that's where we all were after the storm. However, as it began to be revealed to us, there were others really planning how to take things over and threatening that if we can't have, for example, the city of New Orleans with fewer poor people and better services than we, being the group of people and residents in New Orleans who have some power and control over businesses and governmental decision-making, that they're going to leave, like they're going to basically turn New Orleans into a Detroit, Michigan situation. Right. That was the threat. And so to cater to that, as well as to cater to the discretionary authority that our government has in times of national disasters, and at the time, the governmental leadership being in the person of President Bush, who planned to have this conservative recovery agenda and put it in the hands of the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank, and people like Karl Rove, we were really up against it in terms of what you're saying, this opportunity for all residents to be a part of a process and planning and working to rebuild the places that our neighborhoods and our communities and our city and our region. That opportunity never existed. And what we've been dealing with over the last 10 years is resisting the actions and plans and programs of people who want to displace us from our communities, who are have taken over schools, the healthcare system, and privatized those things, who are creating a situation where housing has become extremely unaffordable for people, which is pushing residents outside of the city and into the outskirts of the city. I mean, we are not all rowing in the same boat when we say the words recovery or resilience. People are using them in some ways that mean just that have really perverted the meaning of those words.
What about the issue of housing, Monique? People lost so many homes. So many people lost their homes, had their homes damaged, weren't able to rebuild, started out in temporary housing but remained in temporary housing. What sort of rebuilding of residential homes has happened in Katrina? And also related to that, has there been a demographic shift away from poor African Americans in the aftermath of Katrina?
Well, we have about 100,000 or more African American residents who have not been able to return to New Orleans.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
And that's in a city with a roughly, before Katrina, I think the number of African American residents was in the 400,000 population range. So we have roughly 300,000 African-American residents currently in the city, which is down by about 100,000. And that's according to the New Orleans Data Center, which is a local organization that has been compiling and looking at census data and compiling this information over the years. The situation with housing, though, is one where the grants that were afforded to residents to repair homes was done in a racially discriminatory manner, such that African Americans received far fewer amounts in repair grants, which means that homes did not get rebuilt in African American neighborhoods. Hmm. So, for example, if you look at the Lower Ninth Ward, which is, you know, I think people even outside the city know about the Ninth Ward because it was such a hard-hit area with flooding after the, you know, as part of this big, giant civil engineering disaster we had with the levee failures in the city. Well, about, I think before Katrina, there was about 16,000 or so residents who lived in that section of the city, of the Ninth Ward, and about 4,000 or so have been able to return. So there are 12,000 residents who are no longer back, and it's largely as a result of the refusal to provide the adequate funds needed to repair and rebuild homes, which was not the case in other neighborhoods that were predominantly white, like Lakeview.
Hmm. Well, finally, in the last minute of our conversation, the issue, of course, of future hurricanes is very, very real, given that the climate continues to be bombarded by CO2 and fossil fuel consumption is not slowing down fast enough. It will be, unless serious measures are taken, it will again be primarily poor people of color that would be impacted by future hurricanes, right?
Well, absolutely. The way we're going, if we don't fight for a human rights standard for disaster recovery that ensures that people have the right to recover, as our government has promoted in foreign countries, we will continue to have this scenario of people being displaced within the United States and living very destabilized lives that can last for generations. You know, in New Orleans, we are on the front lines, and in Louisiana, we are on the front lines of the causes and effects of climate change. We have some of the most intensive and largest number of petrochemical facilities that are releasing pollution that's not only causing us asthma and cancer and other problems, but it's also warming the planet. And we're also on the front lines of what comes after that, those climate effects of stronger hurricanes and sea level rise. So, you know, the work that we're doing in New Orleans and in so many communities in the Gulf region, people need to support folks on the ground in terms of fighting for the places that we call home. Because if we give up on the Gulf region, there are fewer and fewer places in America that become livable if you look at the effects of climate change into the future. And so working to save and rebuild our coastline is extremely important. Reducing pollution is extremely important, as well as ensuring that people have a way to recover with dignity and with justice. They're all part of this fight that we're having in the Gulf region with our local, state, and federal governmental authorities and the developers who they support.
Monique, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Monique Hardin is the co-director and attorney with Advocates for Environmental Human Rights. You can find them online at ehumanrights.org.